skill levels from beginning to advanced. For more information on programs and classes, call 262-636-9177.
Support for WGTD comes from the Racine Theater Guild, presenting Ken Ludwig's A Fox on the Fairway through March 8th. Rival country clubs compete head-to-head in this farce. More information is available at racinetheater.org or by calling 633-4218. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Lenny Aquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, and Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist at the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Hello and welcome to Community Matters. I'm Jane Herring, and we're going to have a fun program today talking about pets. And from a very special standpoint, and that is our shelters for animals, which is a great way of keeping strays off the street and giving new homes to animals who have to be surrendered. We have three different rescues and humane societies represented here today. We're going to be talking with Kristen Girelli, who is from Alive Rescue, Angela Speed, who is representing Wisconsin Humane Society and the Racine Campus, and Adolfo Dorda, who is with Safe Harbor Humane Society in Kenosha. Welcome.
Hi, how you doing, Jane?
Hi.
It's really nice to have you here today, and I am looking forward to, because I know what we're going to talk about in a little bit greater detail is some new exciting news in each one of your organizations. But first, let's start with Angela, and if you can tell me a little bit about the Racine operation of the Wisconsin Humane Society, because I think even being a Wisconsin Humane Society organization is new for Racine.
Yeah, so just the basics. The Wisconsin Humane Society is the oldest and largest shelter in Wisconsin, and we do operate five sheltering locations in Racine, Milwaukee, Saukville, Green Bay, and Door County. And the Racine campus was acquired in 2015. It was acquired in 2013, excuse me, in 2013. Oh. And so we've been operating there for just over 6 years. And we're really excited to be expanding by opening up a new building in the spring.
And then let's go to Adolfo with Safe Harbor Humane Society.
Yeah, Safe Harbor Humane Society has been operating in Kenosha County for 103 years.
Wow.
We are an open admission shelter. Mm-hmm. We take in strays and surrenders from the public. And we do not just dogs and cats, but we also do small rodents. We've had the occasional reptile. We even had a 650-pound potbelly pig last summer. Her name was Olive. She was very delightful. But as was also mentioned with Wisconsin Racine, we are also in the process of expanding so we can further assist the residents of Kenosha County. It's very exciting.
And let's talk about Alive Rescue, which has not operated here in Kenosha and Racine previously, but I'll let you tell us more about that.
Thank you. I'm excited. So I'm Kristen. I'm the founder of Alive Rescue, and we are currently located in Chicago. We're not as old as some of the other rescue groups. We are founded in 2008, so we're going to be celebrating our 12-year anniversary in March, which is exciting. And currently we have a facility in Chicago. We do dogs, cats, and rabbits. And we're excited to be moving to Wisconsin to Salem Lakes. And that's going to be happening in April. We'll be breaking ground, and we'll be able to double our efforts, our rescue efforts. So we're excited to help Wisconsin.
And I do want to talk now a little bit greater detail about each of the organizations and what you're doing to expand before we get into some of the topics about actually adopting pets and some of the stats in terms of how many animals you deal with on a regular basis. And Kristen, since we were just talking to you about moving into Kenosha County, can you tell us where that's happening and when and how big and all that fun stuff?
Sure. So we will be in Salem Lakes. The exact address is 22520 83rd. And we're calling it the Big Barn. So we had the Little Barn in Chicago, so this is the Big Barn. And it is a big barn. It used to be a dairy barn, and we're converting it into a dog shelter. So it's 4,800 square feet. It's going to allow us to have up to 30 dogs at a time, which is a big deal for us. And it sits on 70 acres, so it's great because the dogs can have access to trails and just be dogs. So they won't just be inside hanging out. They'll also be outside with us. But we're really excited about it.
And why that particular area? What kind of need did you identify?
So we had an adopter who adopted a dog from us in Chicago, and they bought the property up here in Wisconsin, and it was always their dream to have an animal sanctuary.
Oh.
And so they reached out to us, and it's always been my dream to have an animal sanctuary. So we kind of are fitting the needs of each other, and it fell in our lap, basically, and it's been amazing. So that's why we're here, and we want to help Wisconsin. We've been already talking to people in the community to find out where the need is, and we'll be hopefully opening by the end of 2020, the beginning of 2021.
Terrific. And Angela, I know that I think you told me how old the building is that you've been in Racine to this point.
Yeah, so unfortunately, the building that we're currently operating on Chicory Road was originally constructed as a potato barn, not an animal shelter. And despite improvements to the building, it was not built as an animal shelter. And we actually had to add a trailer on the property to accommodate just the volume of cats coming in every summer. So it's about 8,000 square feet, and our new facility is about 16,000 square feet. So we're essentially doubling the size of the space. And so we'll be able to provide much better care for the animals who are coming to us. In addition, there's also just a beautiful veterinary area where our veterinary staff can operate, because we're doing everything from spay-neuter surgeries to orthopedic procedures, and treating all sorts of infections and illness at that facility. So we're super excited about that. And then also, we don't currently have space for community room space to invite, you know, everybody from children to different volunteer groups into the facility. And so the new building also has that sort of space.
Is it on the same property?
No.
Where will this be?
It's actually in Mount Pleasant on the corner of 16th Street and 90th Streets. It's right off of Highway 20, and it's much more accessible to the Racine community.
That sounds very exciting. And I hadn't realized that Safe Harbor is also expanding.
Yeah, we've actually been doing some fundraising over the last year. We haven't really publicly announced anything yet because everything has been sort of in the works. It's been in the planning stages. We're getting ready to make more of a public push for it now that our blueprints are nearing completion. We are in the process of securing the final permits that we need. But we're doing an expansion to our dog room, as well as adding a few other rooms. For anybody that's been to the facility itself, our last remodel was in 2015, which we added two free-roaming cat rooms. We expanded our lobby space and added a clinic. But unfortunately, our dog room is much in the way that it still was when the building was constructed in 1982. Mm-hmm. Back then, that was appropriate, but in 2020, we have higher aspirations. And so we're looking to break down the dog room entirely and expand it to about triple the size. We won't be adding any new kennels. We currently have 42, including intake. We will still end up with 42 kennels, but they will just be that much bigger, allowing for a more comfortable sort of space for our animals to reside. We are also hoping to have an indoor recreational area, because living in Wisconsin, as we know, the elements aren't always cooperative to outdoor play. And while we do have a very nice outdoor play yard, when it's snowing, when it's below zero, when the temperatures are frigid and miserable, it's not good for us or our dogs to be out there for very long. So we're hoping to also incorporate an indoor play area for the animals. And then we're also going to be adding a small mammal room and a foster ward for a lot of our younger kittens as they transition from foster care, going to and from, and then being ready for adoption.
Well, it sounds like all three of you have some exciting things going on. And to me, it kind of begs the question, need. That means that there must also be greater need if you're trying to accommodate that. Can you tell me a little bit more about it? Just jump in. I'm not sure who wants to address it first.
So nationally, it's really interesting. So the national data indicates that animal population coming into shelters is actually falling. And last year, it fell about 3.7% for dogs as far as shelter intake. But what we're seeing at the Wisconsin Humane Society is that the animals who are coming to us as strays, surrenders, or even transfer dogs from out of state are coming to us older and with more issues, both medical and behavioral. And so we are actually putting more resources than ever before into each individual animal. And so I think that's a huge trend that we're seeing.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny you mentioned that. We're seeing similar things as well. Right now, our population is, like many shelters in the area, are very low. But it's sort of the time where we also reach out and do transports from shelters in other states that don't have the resources that Wisconsin thankfully does. We pull a lot of animals from Kentucky, we pull from Oklahoma, et cetera. That said, this past year, we typically see about 3,000, between 2,800 and 3,000 admissions a year, historically. This year, we saw 300 more admissions than we did in years prior. Some of that is due to increased transfer from other areas. Some of it is just our foster season seemed to never end. I don't know how it was for you guys as well, but it seemed particularly busy this year. So as far as need goes, it's never felt like it's been more needed. And as you mentioned, too, a lot of the animals that you do see coming in with behavioral issues, with medical issues, they're just as important as the ones that come in young, healthy, spry. We treat every single one the same and put in the same amount of resources.
And I would imagine it's more difficult for an immediate adoption when the pet comes in with behavioral and medical issues. You need to deal with that first before they are readily adopted.
Correct.
Yeah, they usually stay with us a lot longer. We run a program in Chicago called CRISP, and we go to Chicago Animal Care and Control, and we assist owner surrenders. And the goal is to either keep the pets with the owners, or when they're surrendered to Animal Care and Control, we network with our rescue partners to try to get the dogs or cats to rescue before they end up inside our animal control. And we have seen a lot of cases where it is medical or behavioral. So what we've done is, if it is medical and it's just the family can't afford it, we'll pay for it, because the whole goal is to keep the animals, you know, with the owners. And it works. So
The other thing I would add, so our intake overall as an organization is between like 16 and 17,000 animals a year. And we are actually treating now more than 65% of them for some sort of medical or behavioral issue.
Gosh.
And last year, we had a record 4,000 animals go into foster care.
Wow.
For those medical or behavior issues. And that can range from anything from a simple skin infection or upper respiratory infection to weeks of behavioral training in the home. And what's so cool about that is animals stay healthier in foster care. We learn more about their personalities and their behaviors in the home. And if people are interested, it's always a huge need. If you're not ready to adopt from a shelter or a rescue group, many times all of our groups are looking for foster volunteers.
And that's something that, I was talking to you before the program. I got a puppy, and it was a puppy litter that was brought up from Alabama. And I got him when he was just 9 weeks old, but had been with a foster family. And I guess I hadn't realized how active that is, that there are foster families really in every shelter. It's not just certain rescues that operate that way. Is that a fairly new happening? You mentioned the reasons why, or is that something that's been going on for decades and I was unaware?
I think the smaller rescue, I think the smaller rescue groups obviously relied heavily on their foster
because
foster
of lack
homes.
Of facility, you mean?
Yeah, and the larger organizations like our animal controls, I don't know, I can only speak for Chicago at the moment, but didn't really reach out to foster homes, but now I do see that they are starting to implement foster programs or field trip programs, which is also fun, just getting animals out of the shelter for the day because, you know, some of the animals are at animal control for months. So just for them to go out for the day is so rewarding for them.
Seriously, field trips.
I have this huge smile on my face right now because at Thanksgiving this year, we launched a field trip program over Thanksgiving, and we had a record just within 24 hours, 400 new foster parents applied to foster.
Wow, that's great.
And they loved it. But we did receive the question, oh, I can't possibly take a dog because how could I return him to the shelter?
Right, so then your adoptions increased too.
What a shame.
What we know from the research, and this is really important, is that a dog's cortisol levels, their stress levels, drop significantly the moment they leave the shelter, as nice as the shelter can be. And when they are returned back to the shelter, they don't exceed the levels that they were at before. It's kind of like having a really tough work week, and then you go to Door County for the weekend. And so it's good for the dogs. It's good for the families. And it has such a huge life-saving impact because when you have a lot of animals in a building, there's potential for disease transmission, and they're more stressed out. And so it just creates a better, more relaxing environment for the animals at the shelter, too, who can't go to foster.
Yeah, we've been utilizing that over the last year, and the more that we encourage it with our volunteers, we call them like doggy day trips, and we have a list of places that volunteers are able to take them. They can go down to Scoops for Scoops will give them dog ice cream, and Milwaukee Public Brewery has a dog friendly sort of outdoor area. Where there's a couple of areas downtown where even on my days off when I'm walking down there with my wife, I'll see some of our volunteers taking the dogs. And as you mentioned, sometimes these animals can stay for weeks and even months at a time. And when they're in these indoor cramped spaces, they don't often present the best in their kennels. Mm-hmm. Getting out and expanding their world so that they see more of it, they become more accustomed to new people, new scents, new sounds, new sights, does a lot in not only enriching them just individually, but also it helps with their socialization so that they present better when members of the public come to consider them for adoption.
That makes total sense. And let's talk a little bit about the adoption processes that each of you follow. And how do you qualify families? How do families go about making decisions, or how do you wish families would go about making a decision to bring a pet into their home on a permanent basis?
We have a pretty substantial involved process. A lot of people actually don't like our process, but it works for us. We do home visits. Mm-hmm. So it starts with an application, and then it gets assigned to one of our adoption coordinators who checks references. So we always contact the landlord if they're renting, or homeowners association if they live in a townhome or a condo. If they already have animals, we'll contact their vets just to make sure that they're current animals are up to date on vaccinations, and then we do a home visit. And the home visit's so vital for us because we've noticed that a lot of times we'll take the animal on the home visit, and then that's where we learn it's not the best fit.
Oh, so, okay, so you might bring an animal with. Okay.
Yeah, we do. We bring the animal with us on the home visit, and that's when they get to meet the family. If there are other animals in the house, that's when we do the introduction with the other animals.
And you plan to follow the same process when you move to Salem Lakes?
100%.
Okay. And what about you, Adolfo? What about Safe Harbor? How do you go through an adoption process there?
At Safe Harbor, we have an adoption application, and generally that takes between 24 and 48 hours. We check many of the same references, vet references, landlords. We check them against a database for to see if they've had any, not only gotten in trouble for abusing animals or returning animals for less than desirable reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes people come in and they'll say, well, we just got tired of it. And shelters keep track of all of that, so we have access to a database for that. Mm. We also check for any potential felonies, any sort of violent convictions, domestics, all the things that are pretty typical. We don't do home visits. We actually have members of the family that are adopting the animal. We want all members of the family to meet the animal first. They do an interaction. We don't allow animals, as most shelters do, to be purchased as gifts or as surprises. That's a very ill-advised idea, a little bit more in favor a few decades ago, but we know better now. Mm-hmm. And so after all the members of the family that live in the same household have met the animal, if they are still in agreement, we ask them to bring in any dogs, any especially in the case of dogs. Dog-to-dog interactions are very important. So we'll have the two dogs meet first in a controlled setting with a sort of fence in between them. We have a staff member facilitating that. And then if the dogs appear to be okay with each other, we moved into the same pen, again, under controlled circumstances, to see that the dogs are a good fit for each other personality-wise, energy-wise. It's a few extra steps, but, you know, as you mentioned, it goes a long way to making sure that you get the right fit and you don't see the return rate as high as if you were to just adopt without having those extra steps. Some people, as you mentioned as well, are not fans of it, but we just do what's in the best interest of the animal in the long run.
And what about the Wisconsin Humane Society?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Our approach is completely different than the other two groups. So for the past 20 years or so, our approach is different because our model is different. When you're taking in 16,000 animals a year, it's really important that a lot of them are going home fast. Otherwise, mm-hmm. we'd become massive hoarders, right? So we have to get them out pretty fast. And so we really focus on having conversations with the people who are walking through our doors. We do same-day adoptions, and we do take down, of course, an adopter profile to learn about what that person is looking for to make good matches happen. But it is a same-day adoption process, and everybody's paired with an adoption counselor to work through that. And as far as gift adoptions, too, that was brought up. That's something that we've looked at really carefully, too. And the national research says that return rates and attachment to an animal adopted during the holidays or even as gift adoptions is no different than any other time of the year. So we do, of course, working with families to make sure it's good matches, we do gift adoptions as well.
And what about from the family standpoint? Because I think that, to a certain degree, you don't exactly want to have a pet to be an impulse buy by any means, because this is going to be a member of your family. What sort of questions should the family kind of ask themselves before they head off and get wooed by, as I mentioned, the big brown eyes appealing at you, take me home?
We talk with our clients a lot about their lifestyle, how much time that they can dedicate to training. Are they looking for somebody who can run a 5K with them, you know, every weekend? We talk about the cost of caring for an animal and what they should be expecting, any sort of special needs an animal might have, and really talk through those sort of expectations and lifestyle. And then, of course, what that animal needs, who on our adoption floor would be a good fit for that family. One of the really interesting things that we found, we did a survey of about 10,000 adopters, and surprisingly, 75% had been actually considering an animal for more than 6 months. The number of people who had only been considering an animal for like a week or so was about 3%. So we don't actually see that many impulse decisions. People are really thoughtful about it.
I think oftentimes it's what's equally important. We focus a lot on the human component of it, but I think very important is if that animal is a right match for that person. And I think you alluded to that a little bit. And a lot of that comes in with just a lot of intake and screening, testing, and all that. But oftentimes when we sit down with somebody, if we're doing an interaction with an animal, our staff knows our animals fairly well, as do our adoption counselors. And we are very forward and very detailed as to the kind of home that this animal would be best with, the kind of personality that this animal would click best with. And, you know, we don't see, as you said, there are people that come in and they're just looking. Oftentimes they have been considering it for a while. But I think the return rate comes more into play when they aren't considering the type of personality, the type of activity level, the type of dedication that a particular animal would need. Whereas they're just falling for the puppy dog eyes. Oftentimes with younger animals or even some that are a little bit more behaviorally challenging will require a $50 training deposit because we want to encourage that they would be taken to somewhere to learn proper manners, learn proper behaviors, etc. Just to make the overall experience of being with the family and growing with the family much more enriching.
Yeah, we do a training deposit as well for all of our dogs, and it has impacted our return rate. Obviously, it's gone down because families do go through training with the animals, and training, as we know, is more for the humans, not the dogs. Right?
Quite true.
Yeah.
One of the things we've been talking about, the adoption, but you really are each one of you is a shelter. And before we went on air, I wanted to ask you really how to talk about whether you're a no-kill shelter. And the discussion we had briefly was really enlightening to me. So I'd like to repeat that for our listeners. And are you no-kill shelters, and what does that actually mean?
Yeah, I like that we had that discussion.
And yours called Alive.
Yeah.
Let me see. Are you a no-kill?
We are. We consider ourselves no-kill, but like I was saying out before we got on air, that doesn't mean we don't euthanize. You know, that's the reality of the situation. We tend to take in hard animals. Alive loves to take in medical cases and behavior cases. And a lot of times we'll take in a dog that's on death's door, and you know, we'll do our best to get them to a place where they need to be, but there are times when you have to make that decision because the best decision is to let them go. And so we do at times have to euthanize, and that's the reality of that's the reality of rescue.
And you know, I think it's really awesome that you guys take animals that are challenging, because oftentimes no-kill shelters have the benefit of picking and choosing what they bring in. And
okay.
So some will bring in the most adoptable animals versus ones that are more challenging, which again, to me, the no-kill term is a bit of a misnomer. I think it's great that you guys take challenging ones. It's really awesome.
You definitely have to, there's a balance for
absolutely,
sure.
Absolutely. I love the question personally. I know sometimes individuals that work in the rescue field will kind of recoil when asked that. Some people get offended. Mm-hmm. Some people take it as almost as an accusation that you would do something less than desirable. But I tell people, no, we do not classify as a no-kill shelter because we are an open admission shelter. We don't have a say in what we take in. We do not turn away any strays. We schedule surrenders from the public, but as far as stray animals that are found out in the street, brought in by the county and the various municipalities, we take in everything. Sick, injured, healthy, sweet, naughty, nice. All across the board. What I do tell people is that, and we had discussed it outside, oftentimes when they ask, are you a no-kill, they're really meaning, do you euthanize for time and space? Does this animal have a term limit, a lifespan at your shelter before you give up on it? We do not euthanize for time and space. They haven't done so in many, many years. Our longest resident in the time I've been employed with Safe Harbor, which has been about a year and a half, was a cat named Reese, who topped that at 286 days. I'm not sure why this cat took so long getting adopted. She was absolutely lovely, but we do keep them until they are adopted and would only euthanize in the case of some sort of terminal illness or other factor where the quality of life for the animal would be very poor, for the same reasons that you or I, as pet lovers, as pet owners, would consider to make that decision.
And it sounded like Wisconsin Humane Society is very similar to that.
Yes, at WHS, our approach is indeed very similar. Excuse me. Since 1999, we have not euthanized solely for reasons of time or space.
That's
but,
awesome.
Of course, that doesn't mean that we don't euthanize. In Racine, for example, we take in strays, surrenders, police seizures, and some really difficult animals. And of course, if an animal is beyond saving medically, we will euthanize, especially if they're suffering. And then we will not place a dangerous animal back out into the community.
Good.
And that happens. Unfortunately, that does happen. But all of our statistics are also posted on our website. And like last year, we had a 91% live release rate for dogs. So.
Hmm.
And also, you know, there's no standard definition of no-kill. It means a lot of different things to a lot of different groups nationally and locally. And we also know that it's not a stamp of approval about animal care. There are no-kill rescue groups, no-kill shelters, who do not uphold excellent standards of animal care. So that should be considered as well.
You had mentioned earlier, Angela, about the Racine facility. You're going to be doing spay and neuters on site. So you have veterinary services on site. And often it seems that rescue organizations might have a relationship with a local clinic, but you do it. You do most things on your own. What kind of percentage of medical care do you plan to do at the new facility?
Yes, so the Wisconsin Humane Society has about 10 full-time veterinarians on staff, and one of them is located at our Racine campus. And so currently she does all of our spay-neuter surgeries and different services for shelter animals. And then in addition, we're able to provide some spay-neuter services for the public at low cost, and also vaccine clinics where people can get low-cost vaccines on a regular basis. And we offer those every month. And we'll continue to do those in the new building and hopefully even grow the vaccine clinics.
And what is Safe Harbor all about in that regard?
We do not have a dedicated full-time vet at this time, but we have four part-time vets that work with us kind of out when they're not working for their regular private practices. We generally have a vet at our facility 5 days a week, and we also offer spay and neuter services to the public. We do about 2 dates a week on average. Sometimes we'll add in one more a week, and we do all of our own spay and neuter services, all of our own medical services, and we also do once a month a public low-cost vaccine clinic.
And what about Alive? Will that be where you work with vets in the community, or will you have facilities on site? I can't remember if you said.
No, I didn't say. That's okay. So we currently have great relationships with vets in Chicago. We don't have a vet on staff, so anytime one of our animals needs vetting, we send them to one of our vet partners. We're able to do our own vaccines on site to a point. And the same thing when we come to Wisconsin, we'll have established relationships up here with clinics. We also do vaccine clinics, though, in Chicago. We go into different neighborhoods in the summer and we offer vaccines, and then we do spay neuters. We have we fund spay neuters for individuals that need that for their animals.
And do you all provide spay neutering of animals before they get adopted?
Alive Rescue does.
Yes. We don't adopt out without it being.
Thought that was pretty typical, but
I just wanted to add too. I think that the need for vaccine clinics and low cost veterinary services is something that we're definitely seeing growing in our community, especially because of poverty. So we have a newer spay-neuter clinic in West Dallas, and we're doing almost 10,000 spay-neuter surgeries a year for the general public, which is just astounding, but that need is definitely there.
It impacts our numbers. I know just offering the clinics, we're seeing a decline in intake at our animal care and control.
It makes a huge impact. And last year, what we actually saw was that the Wisconsin Humane Society as an organization is now serving more owned animals than we are homeless animals. So we serve about 40,000 animals a year. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating.
Same for us, too.
Because, shelter intake is going, but we're serving the public through vaccine clinics, our pet food pantry, spay-neuter clinic, because that need in the community is huge, and especially in areas of poverty where people don't have access to those resources. And sometimes in pockets of Milwaukee, not even access to a pet food store. There's an area in 53206 zip code in Milwaukee that we work where there's not a single veterinary clinic. And the spay-neuter rate in that community was about 9% when we started working. In most neighborhoods, it's about 80% in Wisconsin. So there's a huge need in that area.
Yeah, we weren't offering... We didn't offer them up until maybe about a year ago. We had stopped offering them for about a year in between vets. And once we got the part-time vets working with us, we began offering them again. And the popularity of them has been more than we've anticipated. I mean, we book out almost a month and a half to 2 months in advance, and we can't add them fast enough. You're definitely right. We see more animals from the public for our vets, even more animals from the public rather than our own. Mm-hmm. It's great.
And do you all work with, especially those who have the vets on site, do you work with other rescue-type organizations and have any partnerships with them to provide some of those services?
Yeah, actually, we recently... we've done some work for JR's, which you mentioned you got your puppy from. We have worked with Canines for You. We've worked with Kindred Kitties down here in town with Kathy, Kenosha Forgotten Friends. And recently we began to take animals from Jody over at Wolfgang Rescue in Racine.
Jody.
Yeah, Jody's great. So yeah, that often, you know, when we have a bounty at our shelter, be it access to vaccines or... just
space.
Extra space in our spay-neuter schedule, we're always reaching out to see who we can accommodate.
We do the organization that I was telling you about earlier, CRISP. It's a partnership. There's 10 rescues. We're all working together to make it happen. And I think partnerships are so key when it comes to the rescue community because it's not something that ever was a part of the rescue community. And believe it or not, I don't know if you guys have found that up here, but it was more about competition, I think. And now that rescues are working together, we're making such an impact in the community. And
you know, I think that's something that isn't talked about enough. And not to kind of segue into something different. But
please do.
I manage our social media, and I recently made a post regarding the story of a dog that we pulled from another shelter who did not have the resources. The fact that people seemed surprised that shelters work together in such a high capacity. We've been putting more of how we work as a shelter, be it on a private level and with other shelters, out more to educate the public of what we do and just kind of how it works. And a lot of people were surprised that shelters in Wisconsin would take animals from other states, or that sometimes larger shelters, well, large by our standards, not, you know, Wisconsin Humane, but would rely on a smaller rescue for an animal that had very specific needs. And so everybody has a very important role in the overall puzzle. And I think that, you know, we mentioned at the beginning of the program talking about the place for shelters at a time right now, you know, in Wisconsin. But, you know, the animal rescue field and the animal advocacy field isn't just localized. It's nationalized. It's worldwide. You know, you have shelters that pull from even other countries, from states that need it, countries that need it. And, you know, we do more by working together rather than by competing against each other.
Yeah, I mean, I think collaboration with other shelters is key. And there's almost like an underground railroad network happening, and the public doesn't necessarily see it. But on a weekly basis, we're putting a call out from the Wisconsin Humane Society to other shelters saying, do you need help? We have no cats. We have no cats on the adoption floor right now.
What?
Does anybody have cats? We can help you. And we're now actually in the wintertime putting that call out even out of state for cats. Summer is an entirely different picture.
Yeah.
But we definitely work with other shelters and rescue groups and collaboration. It takes a village to do this work.
Yeah,
I think that's certainly true.
I think a lot of different rescues have different niches. So, you know, one rescue, like we were talking earlier, there's breed-specific rescue groups.
Sure.
They know that breed. So if you have a dog that's struggling and because you just don't understand it maybe as well as the breed-specific rescue, then reach out to them, call them. Like, it does take a village.
Mm-hmm. I have been amazed. Like I say, JR's is where I got my Oakley. And how it's a nice forum for people who have are experiencing problems with their pets that they got through rescue, and people chime in, and it, like you say, it's a village. I think that's really helpful. And I know you said you manage the social media for Safe Harbor. I'm sure there's a lot of interaction there too.
Yeah, and you know, it's something that I've actually began to, you know, more than. You know, you understand the rescue work, and you understand the sort of from the inside, but you don't really see how the public sees it from the outside. So one thing that I've kind of dedicated to doing more of is having that kind of transparency, is educating people on how things work, because if you don't educate them, they don't know. And so, you know, like we recently had a cat that we, even though with our resources, would need to dedicate lots of round-the-clock care to, and we relied on a smaller foster-based rescue who was able to take this cat, which would likely realistically end up as a hospice situation, mm-hmm. but they took this cat, Eddie, on, and he'll need a lot of attention that at the time when we, you know, were having 200-plus cats in our facility, a cat like that doesn't fall by the wayside out of not caring for it, out of not wanting it, but, you know, sometimes you have to know when a niche rescue would be a better fit, and you have to set your willingness to save every single one yourself aside and reach out and ask for help from somebody who's more suitable. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that hand is reached out and asked of us. Other times we reach out and ask for that help ourselves. Mm-hmm. But it's knowing how to make that dynamic work that allows your work to blossom more than you could just on your own.
We just have about 3 or so minutes left, but I do want to make sure that each of you can tell us a little bit about how the public can reach out and help you folks, whether it's providing volunteer hours or donations. What's the best way of contacting each one of you if you want to begin?
Sure.
The golfball?
We're always looking for volunteers, and as has been mentioned, fosters. Anybody interested in volunteering, fostering, or even looking at our adoption process is invited to check out safeharborhumanesociety.org. We are always taking on new help. We also invite you to follow us on our Facebook page, Safe Harbor Humane Society. Just look it up on Facebook. And we're going to be doing way more in the community this year than in years past. We're going to be engaging local businesses. We're going to be reaching out to do more education on a one-to-one level than the shelter has traditionally done in the past as part of a rebranding. And we, the more volunteers that we have helping us with that, the more we are able to do. The same goes for resources and donations, but you can find all that on our website. We break down how we use it and what we need it most for.
And Kristen, Alive Rescue?
Yes, so you can follow us on aliverescue.org is our website. We also have a Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn account, all Alive Rescue. But since we're not breaking ground until April, we're not doing a huge push for volunteers yet. But once we break ground, we're going to need a village up here to help us run the big barn for sure. So we'll definitely be reaching out for volunteers for that. We're going to be launching our capital campaign soon for Big Barn. So we'll definitely need donations. There's going to be naming opportunities for people to help us build the big barn. And then if you want to meet us, I will actually personally be at Sandlots on Super Bowl Sunday. We're doing a puppy bowl there.
Oh,
so come out to Sandlots in Salem. Meet us. You can see the plans for the new shelter. And you can just talk to me and the volunteers about what our needs will be.
That sounds great. And Angela?
So you can find more information about the Wisconsin Humane Society's Racine campus and all of our locations at wihumane.org. And I would say that right now our biggest need is for foster parents. We are always looking to onboard new foster parents, and especially those who are able to take on neonatal kittens who don't have a mom. Those kittens have to be bottle fed pretty much every 2 hours until they're 3-4 weeks old. It's a grueling job, but it has a huge impact on our ability to save those kittens. If you're interested in adopting, you can find information on our website, or interested in making a monetary contribution. There is no national umbrella group in animal welfare, and so we have to work hard to inspire every dollar. We don't receive general government funding.
Well, I want to thank you all. I learned so much about the operations, and you really get people enthused about how they can help with each of your organizations. So I thank you, and you have been listening to Community Matters on WGTD.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Support comes from Piasecki Funeral Home, hosting Grief Share, a 13-week support group program for adults grieving the death of someone close, running every Wednesday, February 26th through May 20th, 5:30 to 7 p.m. To register, call Ann at 262-658-4101. WGTD-FM is now available on your smart speaker. Simply say, play WGTD on TuneIn and hear WGTD programming. 24/7 Jazz is also available. Simply ask, play WGTD HD2 on TuneIn.
WGTD is an affiliate of Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR, a cultural asset and a community resource. WGTD is owned and operated by Gateway Technical College with additional